Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us on this week's program. If you'd like to contact the show with a question, comment, or any other hockey-related thought, please do so by sending an email to breakouthockey@radiostar.com. Again, that's breakouthockey@radiostar.com, or you can follow along on Twitter, @Adam_Summers. So, as always, with those pleasantries out of the way, a quick apology, as yes, it has been more than a week's time since the last time I did this show. It's been a very busy couple of weeks. Sadly, not busy with going to live hockey games, as every conceivable outlet to get to a game within a reasonable drive's distance has been exhausted. I was holding out hope that the Milwaukee Admirals of the AHL would defeat the Houston Aeros and advance to the conference finals so that I'd be able to go see the Hamilton Bulldogs play against Milwaukee in Milwaukee. That would have been about a 2.5-hour drive. But alas, that did not happen, even with the parent team, the Nashville Predators, sending several players back down to Milwaukee. They lost in Game 7 to Houston, dashing my hopes and dreams of seeing live hockey anytime soon. So now, as far as an in-person hockey fix, I shall wait for the Blackhawks prospect camp as well as the Blackhawks convention, and then get into preseason action in September. Sad that it's going to be that long, but oh well, can't complain, especially after the amount of live hockey I've been to the last couple of years. So, we are going to get into some playoff notes. I do want to briefly mention, and you can check this for the record on my Twitter feed at Adam_Summers. Again, it's twitter.com/Adam_Summers. I did make predictions before the start of the conference finals. I predicted Tampa in 5 over the Boston Bruins, and I also predicted the San Jose Sharks over the Vancouver Canucks in 7 games. So we shall see how that turns out, and we'll get into the playoffs a little bit later on in this program. Definitely wanted to get into a couple of things first. The most pressing in my mind, at least, is the entire saga taking place really since the last time I recorded an episode of this show, a little bit under 2 weeks ago, that being the Atlanta Thrashers ownership / relocation situation. It seems as though the last 2 weeks have been packed with more twists and turns, or at least as many twists and turns, as the whole 2+ year saga between Glendale, the NHL, Holsizer, Moyes, Reinsdorf, Balsillie, and any other name you want to throw in there. Just a crazy couple of weeks in Atlanta, all stemming from a team that, much like Phoenix, has been hemorrhaging money for a long time. A team that has an ownership group, that being the Atlanta Spirit Group, which also owns the Phillips Arena in Atlanta, as well as the NBA's Atlanta Hawks. A incredibly dysfunctional ownership group that has been in litigation amongst themselves, partially some of the reason just to determine who actually is the true owner of the team as far as making decisions are concerned. Now, a lot of people have come out, not that this is a surprise, I think everybody's known for several years now that this is a mismanaged team, but even current or former employees, Darren Elliott being one of those, have basically come out and said that the team has been mismanaged really ever since Ted Turner sold his interest in the team. Others have come out and said that basically from the 2008 All-Star Game, which was held in Atlanta, that pretty much from that point forward, I think the quote was that the owners have basically kept their hands in their pockets and not really done a whole heck of a lot. So it's been an absentee ownership at best. A dysfunctional ownership, I think, is probably an accurate way of putting it, and as anybody who's followed the league over the last several years can attest, it's responsible, or at least partially responsible, for really, really unbelievably bad attendance for an NHL franchise. And we see several teams throughout the league year in and year out that do not draw well. The Florida Panthers would certainly fit fit that bill, the Tampa Bay Lightning, until their recent turnaround, and even then, until the playoffs, they had trouble filling the building. They would fit that bill. The Columbus Blue Jackets have taken a nosedive as far as attendance and local popularity is concerned after their playoff bid several years back led to a couple of years of futility these last few seasons. So Atlanta, definitely in that mix, but even more noticeable. I mean, when you watch their games, it's sad. You see the lower level, and it's barren. It's empty. I mean, they may want to take a cue from NASCAR, and for entire sections that are empty, just try to get sponsorship money and have a big sponsor placard over sections. I mean, who knows? They could certainly stand to be as creative as possible to bring in revenue. The Florida Panthers have done that. They have actually, this is a story I'm not sure if we got into earlier on in the year, but the Florida Panthers actually have sold the naming rights of the actual sheet of ice that is the rink at the Bank Atlantic Center in Sunrise, Florida. So you have Bank Atlantic, obviously, with the naming rights of the building, but they've sold a separate naming rights to the ice itself. They're looking at every possible way to bring in revenue, which we've talked about for sure on this program. One of the other ways they've looked at bringing revenue in is directly advertising to opposing teams' fans to sell discounted tickets to them when that team comes in and plays. We talked about that in terms of their annual couple of visits by the Montreal Canadiens, which draw well. They play particularly to those fans. They also had an event when they played the Chicago Blackhawks this past year where you could have a meet and greet and party with Dal Talon, who they billed as the architect, not as the GM of the Florida Panthers, but the architect of the 2010 Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks. So some creative things going on there. We did even see some creative marketing with the Atlanta Thrashers towards the end of the season when they had the whole series of vignettes with the mascot having stolen the Zamboni, getting put in jail, and the promotion was that they needed to sell, I think it was either 5,000 or 15,000 tickets to get the mascot out of jail. Have not heard a whole lot of follow-up on that, so I don't know if that drive was unsuccessful, and they dropped the they just sort of dropped the marketing campaign quietly, or what happened. But the end result is that the Atlanta Thrashers have been, as I said, hemorrhaging money for a long time. The ownership group has been for several years, but is actively and publicly looking for a way out. And the worst kept secret in all of hockey was that if the Phoenix situation, if there was a stay of execution, as there has been for 1 year with Glendale pumping in another $25 million into the team, which kind of amazing that they've now pumped in, over the course of 2 years, $50 million to a team when a couple more years like this and they basically may have been better just owning the team, purchasing the team outright as a municipality. But in any event, with that situation, if not settled, at least stabilized for the next 12 months or so, that means that now all eyes are on Atlanta. True North Sports and Entertainment, who had been quietly waiting in the wings, going the anti-Jim Ball silly route, being very quiet, going through all the proper channels in hopes of being able to bring the Phoenix Coyotes back to their original home of Winnipeg. That situation has failed, at least for this year. So they are now in advanced negotiations, it seems. It's been reported in several places as such, with the Atlanta Spirit Group to purchase the Atlanta Thrashers. What preceded that was kind of amazing in that the week or two leading up to that, we had rumors flying left and right. We had an amazing story that shows the power of Twitter when I believe a young Edmontonian who goes by the Twitter handle of Epic Puck Bunny had a little bit of fun with everybody on Twitter and by extension with the hockey world media as she tweeted that there would be a press conference the following day at the MTS Center in Winnipeg to announce that the Thrashers were officially coming to Winnipeg, Manitoba. There were As I said, it got retweeted, spread all around Twitter. It got official refutations from TSN, from the NHL itself. This young tweeter was even featured in several legitimate news articles talking about the power of Twitter in sports. So that was a fascinating little side note. We've seen and heard so many different things as far as who could be mystery saviors for the Atlanta Thrashers. As far as ownership was concerned, we've heard from Tom Glavine, who has an interest as a former Major League Baseball pitcher and also a talented amateur hockey player who has become a major fan of the Thrashers. He's had some interest in trying to keep the team in Atlanta, but has not been able to put together a group to be able to do that. There have been reports of everybody from P. Diddy to Anson Carter to Lil Jon to Jerry Bruckheimer being involved in some sort of combination of an ownership group, but none of that has come through. There was the story, which if you haven't been following the situation way too closely, you may not have heard over the past several months, of the mystery buyer who wanted to buy the Atlanta Thrashers, the Atlanta Hawks, and the Phillips Arena, who had been referred to by a personality in Atlanta only as, quote, the Balkan. This situation had been building and building for weeks and months, and this person was finally revealed as having an interest, but it came out, I believe, today or yesterday, as I record this on a Wednesday afternoon, that this potential buyer has some money woes of their own in terms of owing large sums of money to companies that they've done business with in the past. So one would think that barring, and you can never count Gary Bettman out when it comes to making sure that there is no egg on his face or making sure that he can keep one of these teams that really were the hallmark of his vision for the National Hockey League, he will go to the ends of the earth to keep those teams where they are. So maybe he can pull a rabbit out of his hat. It's not the same situation as Glendale. I know some people have talked about, well, why isn't the league doing this with Atlanta? Why aren't they doing this with Atlanta? Well, it's a different situation. The league owns the Phoenix Coyotes. They don't own the Atlanta Thrashers. You also have a situation in the city of Glendale / Phoenix that municipality has taken an interest in doing whatever is possible to keep the team there. That same situation has not taken place in Atlanta. The mayor of Atlanta has said that they have no interest in financing a team, so that's different. Granted, you could make the argument that the whole reason the league owns the team in the first place is that when it went into bankruptcy following the mismanagement of the team by Jerry Moyes, that the league purchased the team so that it could not fall into the hands of Jim Balsillie. You could argue the validity of them making that purchase, but in the end, that's what it is. They own one team, they don't own the other, so it's going to be a little bit different situation as far as how they handle things. But the end result of all this seems to be, very tentatively speaking, because like I said, you never know what's going to happen with Gary Bettman, but it seems likely, at least, that the team will relocate to Winnipeg, probably still stay in the Southeast Division for 1 year, which will make for crazy travel for them, and you would imagine cash-strapped teams like the Florida Panthers will not be thrilled about having to make three trips to Manitoba next season, but I would imagine if that would only be a one-year thing, we'd either see Detroit move to the Eastern Conference. They've been calling on that for a long time. Supposedly they have dibs on the first move to the East. Geographically, one would think Nashville would make the most sense to move to the Southeast Division. There's also been talk of Columbus. If this all comes to pass, even burrow down further, you wonder what's going to happen with AHL affiliations. Apparently, the Chicago Wolves do not appear likely to renew their agreement with the Thrashers organization, regardless of where they end up. So that there could be a ripple effect there. But if Winnipeg does move to Atlanta, the one concern I have is this, and it's this is a tough one because as far as hockey in Atlanta is concerned, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not going to profess to have followed Atlanta anywhere near as closely as the diehard fans they have in Atlanta, but I've always, as a fan, sort of had them in my back pocket as one of my backup teams. I've always enjoyed watching them, enjoyed following them. I do not see that City long term, and this would be the second time they've lost an NHL team. I don't see them long term being able to weather the storms, the ups and downs of an NHL franchise and support that team long term. But in the same sense, just because of that, and again, I'm sensitive to this because I live this here in Chicago. Just because they officially only fill the rink to 72% capacity on many nights, it's far, far lower attendance than that, probably somewhere in the 5,000 range. But just because they do not have the quantity of fans that other markets have does not mean that they are lacking in absolute diehard Atlanta Thrashers hockey fans in that city. They may not be plentiful, but they are there. And as somebody who sat in the United Center when the times were dark, when number 19 was Kyle Calder and not Jonathan Toews, and number 19 for a year was Dennis Arkhipov and not Jonathan Toews, it's really hard for me to hear the fans that do exist of the Thrashers, A, get ripped mercilessly by some fans of other teams, and also get just their hearts ripped out. That's the only way to describe it as a hockey fan. That's what's going on right now, and I can only imagine being a fan. And that's what I ask of anybody who is going to go on Twitter or ridicule or tease a Thrashers fan at this point. Think about how you would feel if your team, the team you followed for as long as you've been watching hockey, if one day they were gone. And for some of you in Winnipeg who I'm sure are listening, you're saying right now, I know, that's what happened to us. It was terrible. And I guess I just ask that you keep that in mind, either if you've gone through that before or you imagine what that would be like. You keep that in mind before you tear into Thrashers fans. Because I know personally, as somebody, I have several allegiances, but none stronger than my lifelong fandom of the Chicago Blackhawks, my hometown team here in Chicago. And as a fan, you invest, as I said on, I said this on my Twitter account earlier in the week, you invest a lot of your money, you invest a lot of your time, and at a certain point, you realize that you invest a lot of your personal identity in your fandom of the particular team that you choose to follow. So just think about what that would be like if one day that was ripped away from you. Because I'm not going to lie, there were times at the United Center years ago on a Wednesday night when one of two things would happen. There'd either be 5,000 people in the building total, and you'd look around and there'd be maybe 10 other people in your section on a good night, or if it was a team like Detroit that would come in, the building would be sold out and there'd be 15 to 17,000 Red Wings fans and maybe 5,000 Blackhawks fans, and those games weren't too pleasant either. You couldn't help but look around and think, man, if this wasn't Chicago, and even then, who knows? How long can this continue? How long can a team continue to function when things are this bad? So just try to keep all of that in mind and keep in mind that while they may not be as plentiful as fans in Chicago or Philadelphia or Boston or any of the major markets in Canada, there are still hockey fans that are going to be absolutely devastated if this comes down. So just as enthusiastic as you may be, and completely understandably so, I endorse all enthusiasm if you are a Manitoban, a Winnipegger who is just beside themselves with joy about the possibility of the, don't know if it'll be the Winnipeg Jets, it may be the Manitoba Moose or the Manitoba Falcons, but NHL hockey coming back to your city. Be as excited as you possibly want to be, but please don't try to take down other hockey fans as you lift your own spirits up. And that's a very, very, very small minority of people are engaging in that, but it's something that struck a nerve with me, so there you go. Spent way more time on the show than I expected to talk about that, but that is a story that I'm sure we will follow throughout the last couple of weeks of the playoffs here, and I would imagine that will drag on into the off season, which, by the way, I haven't mentioned this in the past several shows, but we will be here on a regular basis throughout the off season to talk about everything that's going on. I would imagine the show immediately after the Stanley Cup Finals. We'll obviously get into the Stanley Cup Finals, looking back at it in great detail, but we will also, prior to the NHL Draft, we'll have a draft preview show. We will also have a free agency preview show prior to July 1st, and we will continue to do shows throughout the course of the offseason, as I said, because there is going to be plenty to talk about. The other thing hanging ominously on the horizon, the thing that I've tried to ignore, avoid, not acknowledge at all, is the looming conclusion of the current collective bargaining agreement, which ends at the end of the 2012-2013 season, that being next season. And as other sports here in the United States go through their own labor issues, there are ominous signs. I'm trying to be optimistic, and I hope that all parties involved realize the damage that could be done if there is another work stoppage. But when you look at the money, again, that teams like Atlanta, Columbus, Florida, Phoenix, even Nashville, which playoff rounds, additional playoff games help, but even Nashville is struggling to reach break even, much less profitability on a year-to-year basis. All these teams are to greater or lesser degrees hemorrhaging money, and this is under a collective bargaining agreement that was almost explicitly designed, or at least that was the spin that was put out by the league, a CBA that was designed to help those teams survive and get small market teams on an even playing field, both on ice and financially. And we've seen part of that work out in that, you know, we've never seen more competitive playoff races, at least in modern NHL history. But we also have a scenario where teams that are not bringing in great revenue are actually being forced to spend more via the rising salary cap and therefore the rising salary cap floor, or I should say the rising salary floor. You have teams like Florida that are forced to spend more than they very likely would otherwise. You have other teams like the New York Islanders, which have, and all legal, but have utilized several contract buyouts to get them over the cap, their actual on ice or active roster salary payroll this year was actually below the floor. So you have a lot of things like that going on. So it's going to be very interesting, because the players are going to be looking for, particularly spearheaded by Don Fearnow, the players are going to be looking for, they're not going to be looking for less money, that's for sure, because the league, as far as television ratings, as far as the new television package, the new television contract here in the States, as far as overall league attendance, to use a marketing term that I hate to use, but brand awareness, all those things are trending very much upward right now. So you wouldn't think that the players' union is going to be too amenable to any sort of reduction in their take of those things, yet there's still persistent talk that Gary Bettman and the NHL want to drop the salary cap to as low as $48 million, that they want another 24% rollback of player salaries, that they even want to make a go at the guaranteed status of contracts, which I think that's a non-starter, and I also think that is going to be more of a negotiating tactic. I think that they will use that hammer to try to get something else, whether it be a salary rollback, whether it be a harder salary cap. I think even Gary Bettman is smart enough to know that is very likely to not happen in the NHL, notwithstanding non-guaranteed contracts in other sports like the National Football League. So we shall see. All that will play itself out, and all of that is one of the main reasons, along with everything else that will break throughout the summer, one of the main reasons why we will be here on a regular basis. I would imagine at least twice a month, if not more, throughout the off season. So with that, I want to mention a couple other stories. One other story right now, just briefly, the incident with Dan Carcillo, an interesting situation in that As Sean Leahy on the Puck Daddy blog at Yahoo.com, sports.yahoo.com, said that the Flyers season came to an end, now 12 days ago, yet it took a full 11 days for the league to announce a suspension for Dan Carcillo. Apparently, he has been suspended for 2 games for aggressive and inappropriate conduct towards officials, both on ice and off ice. So, very, very interesting. I mean, no surprise that Dan Carcillo would end up doing something like this. So we've seen his antics on the ice, and there were some people that actually, when the suspension came down, thought that it may have had something to do with his newfound activity on Twitter. He certainly isn't. He doesn't self-edit much on Twitter since he got on board that platform the last week or two. But nobody knows exactly what it was. As Sean Leahy points out, Carcillo was called for cross-checking penalties in the first and second periods of Game 4. Some people do, though, do think that it has something to do with Dan Carcillo's tweet, which I am going to pull up right here. Dan Carcillo, actually, shockingly, his Twitter handle, OG_CarBomb13. Shocking. But, yeah. He tweeted to Biz Nasty, that being Paul Bissonnette. I'm not even going to mention this on the air. Needless to say, this, if James Wisniewski was suspended for his on-ice gesture towards Sean Avery, who knows? I could put on the tinfoil hat here and very easily believe that the off-ice conduct actually was his tweet. Maybe they're just covering it up. Who knows? In any event, interesting times. So Dan Carcillo will be suspended 2 games starting for the 2011-2012 season. The bigger question is whether he'll actually be in the lineup or whether he'll be a healthy scratch to even be eligible for a suspension. But in any event, a little bit of quick playoff talk here. The series are ongoing as I record this only minutes away from the start of the San Jose Vancouver Game 2. So I don't want to get in too deeply to what is upcoming and really date the show. But I do want to talk a little bit about the Boston-Tampa Bay series, as that series is now tied 1-1, again, as I record this. A fascinating series in that, really, by my estimation, if I'm the Boston Bruins, if I'm Claude Julien, which that's a terrifying thought, but if I'm Claude Julien, given the way their team has played, being the Boston Bruins, I would be okay with the series being 1-1 because they were awful in Game 1. Really, they played one great period, that being Period 2. They didn't look great in the first period, giving up that early goal in Game 2, 13 seconds in, after the 3 goals in a minute and a half in Game 1. And then in the third period in Game 2, Tampa absolutely took over, closed the score from 6-3 to 6-5. Came very close to scoring at the end of the game. So if I'm Claude Julien, I am thrilled to get out of that 1-1. If I'm Guy Boucher, well, I would imagine I'd be angry because Guy Boucher seems... Happiness does not seem to be something that he outwardly shows very well. Very talented coach. You can make your arguments about whether 1-3-1, that system that they employ, is killing hockey. But I would imagine he is not thrilled about how his team played on Tuesday night. That game, particularly the second period, was about as far from the typical Guy Boucher Tampa Bay Lightning style of hockey that they have employed throughout the season and particularly the playoffs. They had to lose a game at some point. Eight playoff games in a row, not too many teams have been able to accomplish that. But it seemed as though when they got that early goal 13 seconds in, that instead of doing what they usually do when they get a goal, which is just clamp down and really take the game over by not allowing much of anything, they kind of seemed as though they thought they had the game won already, and that usually, particularly in playoff hockey, is not a formula for success. Something that has been a formula for success for the Boston Bruins in this series, one of the few things, has been the ice time of Tyler Seguin, finally, with the Patrice Bergeron injury. His most likely concussion, even though they're not coming out and saying it, at least not that I'm aware of, it's upper body injury. It's a concussion. Tyler Seguin, after sitting in the press box for 11 playoff games, got in game one, had an incredible goal, and then was mostly benched for the rest of the game. Kind of crazy, particularly their offensive challenges and their lack of productivity on the power play, that he would still not get that much ice time in game one. Fast forward to game two on Tuesday night. Going into that encounter, they were 2-for-42 in the playoffs on the power play, including being the only team in National Hockey League playoff history to win a series without a single power play goal, that being their seven-game series win over the Montreal Canadiens in round one. They did not score a single power play goal. Obviously, 2-for-42. They did not do much better in the second round against Philadelphia. So you would think, and I give Claude Julien credit for this, that they finally decided, hey, we've got a really talented offensive player in Tyler Seguin. Let's give him a shot on the power play. And what do you know? The power play woke up last night. Tyler Seguin had an incredible game, couple goals, couple of assists, an absolutely beautiful goal on his first goal. Just a tremendous performance that, on the surface, leaves you wondering why didn't he get into the lineup sooner. It also makes you wonder if and when Patrice Bergeron is able to come back. One would imagine at some point in this series, if it goes long, he probably will. Will Tyler Seguin be the odd man out, or will somebody else come out of the lineup instead? I would argue that Tyler Seguin should probably stay in the lineup for a little while. Just my thought if I'm a Boston Bruins fan, which in my life as a fan, I certainly am not. But from their perspective, Seguin should stay in. The other thing I'd be a little bit concerned about on the Boston side is Tim Thomas. Certainly not great in game one. Let in his fair share of less than stellar goals in game two. He did lock it down when it was necessary. That Grant Fuhr style performance enabled him to win 6-5. But if I'm Boston, I'm a little bit concerned about Thomas and that, especially this year. Most of the time, the vast majority of the time he's on, he's great. He's almost impossible to beat. But Tim Thomas is the type of goalie that if he is really, really off sometimes, it's hard for him to get back on the rails, and you know he could find himself pulled. So we will see. Going to be a very interesting series. I think more interesting than a lot of people had pegged going in. That game on Tuesday night was certainly not the defensive struggle that probably either coach would have liked, but very, very entertaining hockey and added a new wrinkle to that series. Whereas San Jose and Vancouver, again, by the time everybody listens to this, game two will be underway or will have already happened. So I'm not going to get into too much analysis of this series, other than to say that if I'm San Jose, or if I'm whoever's coming out of the East, as much as it pains me to say this, I'd be pretty concerned about Vancouver in the sense that this is a team that the Sedins, up until Game 1, and we'll see if that was a mirage or if they've really turned the corner, but throughout the playoffs, they have certainly been far from their best, very far from their best. Roberto Luongo has been good enough most nights, but we have not seen the level of play that Roberto Luongo exhibited throughout much of the regular season. And through all of that, mostly on the strength of Ryan Kessler, the Vancouver Canucks are in a very good place, up one game going into tonight. And I don't know. If I'm the rest of the league, I'm very concerned. From the San Jose perspective, the thing that concerns me after game one of the conference finals is that, if I'm not mistaken, four out of the five games from I guess it would be game four in the second round through game one of the third round, four out of those five games, the San Jose Sharks had a lead in the third period and lost the game. If I'm not mistaken, all in regulation, they lost. So that, for a team that has a lot of demons, and both these teams do, in terms of their ability to win the Stanley Cup, to win the big one, but for a team that has a longer history with this core group of failure at a high level, that being San Jose, that has to be a little bit unnerving. I would be concerned about their ability to shut down the Sedins over a seven-game series because they don't have the Keith and Seabrook defense pair. They don't have the Weber and Suter defense pair that the Blackhawks and Predators have. So they've got some good defensemen, but not a true shutdown pair. So I really think, and I had San Jose in seven, and I still think that's a possibility, but I think Antti Niemi is going to have to seal at least one game for San Jose to win. And he, for the most part, I don't think he's been the problem. He gets himself in situations sometimes where he makes saves more difficult than they should be, but he also makes incredibly difficult saves that no goalie should make. He's been, for the most part, spectacular in the second round and in this round so far, at least through one game. So a lot of it's going to fall on Antti Niemi. Joe Thornton has finally become the playoff performer, at least so far, that people really wondered if he ever could be. Patrick Marleau, I thought, responded well in Game 7 and in Game 1. To me, the guy that's MIA that has not been getting any of the criticism, and this is a familiar theme for him when you go back to last year as well. Danny Heatley has been, you could put him on a milk carton at this point. I will be very interested to see how Danny Heatley responds. He is certainly not an expert in winning puck battles along the boards, and that is one of the hallmarks of playoff hockey. So we shall see how he does throughout the rest of the series. The one other thing that I wanted to touch on before we close out the show, obviously a very sad note that everybody listening to this program is aware of by now, the passing of Derek Bougard late last weekend, 28 years old. Everybody knows Derek Bougard is one of the probably the best fighter, the toughest guy in the NHL post lockout. Played for a long time with the Minnesota Wild. Played briefly with the New York Rangers most recently, and just an incredibly sad story. Not going to speculate on what happened. It's going to be a while, it seems, before anybody knows what the cause of death was. But just a very, very sad, tragic story, and something that in the hockey world we're not used to 28-year-old active NHL hockey players dying. It's not something that, thankfully, we're used to. It's not something that I think anybody really wants, you know, it's not something anybody's comfortable dealing with at all, obviously. It's, again, we've seen, I won't say a lot, but there have been more tragedies like this in football. Obviously, if you're somebody who follows, for example, professional wrestling, that's something that comes with the territory following that form of entertainment, which is people die really young, and by the dozens, and so people end up sort of being desensitized when they hear about the next guy passing away. But with hockey, it's been a little bit different. So this is something that I think has hit a lot of people hard. Again, this isn't even a guy that I really followed, I mean, more closely than any other player throughout the league, but just a very, very hard story and very, very sad. And I don't know, hopefully whatever, you know, whatever happened with Derek Bougard is something that won't happen to other NHL players. I know that his brain has been donated to the Sports Legacy Institute, I believe, the group run by Chris Nowinski, the I believe Harvard graduate, former pro wrestler, who had his career ended by concussions and has since begun a crusade to really understand the true damage of concussions and work with sports leagues to take great steps to try to limit the amount of head injuries that occur in those sports. So hopefully something good will come of that, but a very sad story. Really don't know what else to say about that. Again, just very sad news. So with that, going to close out this week's show. I want to thank everybody again for listening to this week's program and being patient with me as again, it was a little bit longer than I would have hoped between last show and this week's show. We will be back upon the conclusion, most likely, of the second round, maybe sooner, or I should say of the third round, maybe sooner. But at the very least, we will be back upon the conclusion of the conference finals to wrap that up and a preview the Stanley Cup finals, whatever they may be. So, again, with that, I think it's time to shut things down. If you are in any of the four cities that are still involved in play, in Stanley Cup playoff play, have fun at the rink, have fun going through all the craziness that I went through last year as a Blackhawks and Montreal Canadiens fan in the conference finals. If you happen to be in, I know we have several listeners from Finland, congratulations on your world championship victory that just took place a couple of days ago. By the way, no thanks to Versus here in terms of being able to see it live or even within 36 hours, but thank God for the internet and being able to find a stream to watch that. But congratulations to Finland. Just an epic victory for that nation. The celebration seemed to be incredible. Tens of thousands of people, while it may not have been quite the number of people that were in Chicago, this celebration, from what I saw, at least rivaled and maybe even eclipsed the craziness that went down in downtown Chicago last summer. So congratulations to them, and just enjoy the hockey. That's about all that's left to say. So have fun. Make sure you keep watching all the pucks, all the hockey, everything on the ice, and please come back and listen to us next week. And as always, do one thing. Keep it simple.